ever wanted to just, instantly grasp what supporting intense air ops in Vietnam felt like
Right.
from someone who was actually there.
Well, that's what we're diving into today.
Exactly.
Welcome to our deep dive. We take these firsthand accounts, these personal stories, and really dig into what they tell us.
And today.
Today, it's John Wilkinson. He was a second lieutenant, military intelligence at Nekon Phanom NKP in Thailand. Crucial time, 68 to 69.
Right, NKP. And our source material for this is the transcript from episode 61 of the Military Tales YouTube channel.
Yay.
He shared a lot there.
He really did. It's a fantastic perspective.
Yeah, it moves us past the, the dry facts and figures. Wilkinson's story gives this really unique window into intel work supporting aircrews, especially the 62nd Squadron guys. So our mission for this deep dive, really get a handle on his role, what he went through, the challenges, and what he learned at NKP, especially how he worked with the 62nd, based on what he said in that episode 61 interview.
Okay, so let's start with him arriving. John Wilkinson gets to NKP October 18th, 1968. He's a fresh second lieutenant.
Right.
Makes first lieutenant in January 69, finishes his tour October 10th, 69. And it's worth noting, as episode 61 mentions, this wasn't just a one-off tour. He went on to have this long, impressive career in Air Force Reserve Intel, made Brigadier General eventually.
Wow. But even his arrival that first day, it kind of sets the scene, doesn't it? He talks in episode 61 about reporting to the 62nd building first.
Yeah, seems logical.
But nope, had to go find the tactical units op center. Just that little bit of confusion, it tells you something about a busy base in wartime. Things aren't always by the book.
Absolutely. It speaks of that fluid, sometimes chaotic operational tempo. And his first job, straight into supporting barrel roll, Northern Laos, high intensity from the get-go.
Okay, so barrel roll is Northern Laos. Just for context, how does that compare to the other zones?
Good question. You had Steel Tiger, which was focused more on the Ho Chi Minh Trail area, then Tiger Hound down near Cambodia. Distinct areas, distinct challenges.
Got it. Knowing those zones helps understand the world Wilkinson stepped into, especially supporting the 62nd. And they had kind of a split personality mission-wise, right? Based on episode 61.
That's a good way to put it. They flew Firefly and Sandy missions.
Firefly. That was a strike stuff.
Yeah, strikes, armed recon, forward air control facing. Wilkinson's job for those was briefing the pilots, target info, what the enemy's situation looked like, escape routes, the critical intel.
But the Sandy mission, search and rescue, that sounds like a whole different beast. He says in episode 61, it kind of grew up through tribal knowledge.
Exactly. That phrase really stands out. It wasn't in his intel school curriculum. It highlights how much specialized knowledge was developed and shared right there on the ground, pilot to pilot, intel to pilot, super high stakes.
And his role in SAR, still intel support, but different.
Critical support. He'd be trying to confirm if there was a survivor, figuring out enemy defenses around the crash site, finding viable escape routes, and constantly listening in, monitoring those Sandy and Jolly Green radio frequencies.
You can just feel the intensity listening to him recount that in episode 61. He shares these heartbreaking stories he overheard, like a PJ reaching a downed guy only to find he hadn't made it. And then maybe the radio cuts out trying to get the PJ back. It's just awful uncertainty.
Or the opposite, the initial joy of hearing "we got him" on the helicopter, followed moments later by the news he'd died from his injuries.
Ugh, just gut-wrenching. It shows the emotional roller coaster wasn't just for the air crews, but for the support guys like Wilkinson, too, listening in, knowing the human cost.
Totally. It wasn't just data points. It was lives on the line every single time. And then there's this amazing story in episode 61 where Wilkinson actually experiences it firsthand, or close to it.
Oh, the flight, right, with Rich Hall.
Yeah. After a Firefly briefing, Hall just casually says, "Hey, I got a two-seater. Want to go?" Just like that. Shows that camaraderie, that closeness.
And the bit about the oxygen mask, or lack thereof.
Right. Just suck on the tube occasionally. It sounds almost comical, but it really paints a picture of the, let's say, practical nature of things sometimes.
Definitely not standard procedure.
Not at all. But the mission itself was serious business. Near Lima Site 885, they were hitting a suspected truck park, maybe hidden under trees. He describes dropping bombs, firing rockets, guns, the whole nine yards.
But then things went sideways. He got really sick.
Violently ill, yeah. And worse, a bomb hung up on his side of the A1 Skyraider.
That part in episode 61 where he talks about pulling G's, getting disoriented, seeing the sky where the ground should be, terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. Gives you such a visceral sense of the physical and mental stress these pilots endured. And imagine the relief when that bomb finally let go on the third try.
Oh, man. Huge relief.
And that whole experience, he says, it fundamentally changed things for him. He really got it then, understood what the pilots faced daily on a gut level.
Yeah, he mentions the camaraderie improved even more after that. They knew he'd tasted it.
Exactly. And he learned practical stuff, too. Realized the terrain was way more mountainous than maps showed, targets were further out, and crucially, the intel photos they used for briefings. Sometimes months old.
That's a huge gap. Months old intel in that environment.
Massive implications. Is the target even still there? It highlights that constant challenge. Yeah. Getting timely, accurate intel to the operators. His flight really drove that home.
It really does bridge that gap between the intel desk and the cockpit. Shows why that direct experience, even accidental, was so valuable. It wasn't abstract anymore.
No, it was very real. And speaking of real, he paints a pretty vivid picture of life on base, too, in episode 61, the living conditions.
Right, the first hooches.
Yeah.
No AC, walls that didn't reach the ceiling.
Yeah, not much privacy. And a real contrast, he points out, to the air-conditioned quarters for the Task Force Alpha guys. Shows the different priorities, maybe resources.
In the O Club. Sounds like a place.
Doesn't it? Meals anytime, bar always open, studying, drinking, debriefing, all happening together. Kind of captures that wartime bubble feel.
Definitely a unique atmosphere.
And interestingly, he eventually moved in with the 62nd guys, lived in their AC hooches. He thought that was pretty unusual for an intel officer.
Must have really solidified those bonds.
Absolutely. And he talks about the sandy bar they set up first in a hooch, later rebuilt as the Sierra Hotel, their own space, reinforcing that tight-knit community.
But that flight, the unofficial one. His boss found out, right?
Oh, yeah. Colonel Bob Lambert. Wilkinson says in episode 61, he was pretty stern initially. Understandably.
Yeah, unauthorized flight in a combat zone.
But apparently, Lambert later understood. And here's a fascinating detail. Lambert himself, as an intel officer, had wanted to fly missions but couldn't. It was prohibited. So maybe he had some sympathy.
Interesting dynamic. Sounds like Lambert was a good boss overall, though.
Seems that way. Wilkinson mentions him being a mentor, supportive, which you definitely need in that environment.
For sure. And that leads right into this core theme in episode 61. The camaraderie, but also the loss. Mm-hmm. He talks so much about the bonds.
Deep bonds, especially within the 62nd. He describes those survivor parties at the O Club after a successful rescue.
The jolly green giant doll helping the survivor over the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Symbolic moments of celebration.
Yeah, ways to cope, to acknowledge the wins. But he also notes they had to tone it down eventually as the losses mounted.
And the losses were heavy. He mentions, what, maybe 18% of the pilots in the squadron were lost during his year?
That's the figure he suggests based on the numbers cycling through. It's a staggering percentage. Really brings home the constant risk.
You can hear it in his voice in the interview. He talks about feeling like a mother hen, worrying about them, even thought about extending his tour because he felt so connected.
That's powerful. And the strap hanger nickname they gave him?
Right. Their way of saying, you're one of us, even though he was an air crew, shows that acceptance.
Definitely. Now, he also briefly touches on another type of mission, Prairie Fire, part of Steel Tiger.
His involvement was limited there.
Yeah, more observational. He remembers these big briefings and seeing the Army Special Forces team leaders there. Very quiet, very intense.
And that led to a really profound thought he shares in episode 61.
The one about no matter how bad your war is, somebody's having a much worse war.
Yeah, that's humbling. Thinking about those MECVSO guys and the risks they took.
Absolutely. He clearly had immense respect for the bravery across the entire 56 wing, but especially those involved in Prairie Fire and similar ops. Extreme danger.
And looking back now, years later.
He talks about the reunions, how easy it is to reconnect with these guys, even after decades apart. That shared experience, that bond, it just lasts.
A unique kind of brotherhood forged in fire.
Exactly, to transcend time.
So wrapping up this deep dive into John Wilkinson's account from Military Tales, episode 61,
mm-hmm.
We've really gotten some incredible insights. The nitty-gritty of intel work in combat, the sheer intensity of the air missions, especially SAR.
The incredible bonds people formed under that pressure, and yeah, the lasting scars and memories of the war.
It's such a valuable perspective, bringing the human element into focus. It's not just strategy and statistics, it's about people.
Absolutely. His story really illuminates the personal experiences, the camaraderie, the emotional weight of it all, even for those not pulling the trigger or flying the plane.
Which brings us to a final thought for you, listening. Think about how much warfare and technology have changed since Vietnam. Satellites, drones, cyber, it's a different world.
A vastly different landscape.
So how might that change the way intelligence is gathered today? how I'd have changed the relationship between, say, an intel analyst and the drone operator or the pilot.
And maybe more importantly, what hasn't changed? What about those core human elements, service, that connection between people facing danger, the camaraderie? Do those things endure, regardless of the tech?
Something to think about. The enduring human factor in conflict, past and present.